For McCunn Specialty Firearms in Messina, this is Chris Parks, joined as always by the Cass and Adair County Conservation Officer Grant Jelly with the Conservation Report once again this week. Good morning to you, Grant.
Hey, good morning, Chris.
Well, we're rolling on now into the summer season. We've started to see a lot more outdoor activity. Camping's been pretty popular now here these last couple of weeks with some really good weather. Lots of folks been getting out on the water and doing recreational boating and also a lot of more fishing as well. It's just kind of all heated up here as the weather has turned a corner here for us.
Yeah, it has. And, you know, just as per usual with Midwestern summertime weather, we've experienced some thunderstorms and hailstorms that have rolled through the area, and I'm confident we'll see more and more of those here as the summer goes on. But, you know, we're kind of in catch-up phase from the last few years. We've been pretty dry out, and I think we're on pretty good schedule this year for average rainfall. But, you know, one of the things I thought of the other day as it was kind of raining and we were watching the hail come down is this next month or so is going to be kind of a critical time period for our young upland birds. They haven't had any reports yet of young pheasants, but I'm sure it's going to be that we'll be getting those reports any day now. And, you know, the critical time for those little guys is when that kind of like turkeys within that first couple weeks of their life where, you know, if they get wet, it can really be a death sentence for them. And then on top of that, if you throw hail at them, that's almost a sure, you know, death sentence for them. And, you know, when we get a little bit of storm like that or a thunderstorm or a little hail, if the hen is sitting on the nest, she can kind of spread those wings and protect the eggs from getting cooled down or even hail, and she can take that abuse. But when those birds are on the ground and they're out foraging for themselves, and if they stray too far from mom or they're not in an area where they have good overhead protection, these storms or these cooler nights can be really, really critical for the survival of those birds. And we just kind of got to keep our fingers crossed so we can get through some of these storms and have some good weather to finish those birds out and get them out to a healthy start to their young lives.
Yeah, certainly. We do send our thoughts out to some of those folks that have run into bad situations. There was a lot of cropland that was damaged, and I know some farms in the area that really took a big blow there, so that's unfortunate. But you mentioned that, too. I did see something after those storms the other night that is kind of a good reminder. Also, there was a gentleman who posted something about, you know, a young robin that he had found in the yard that kind of maybe got blown around a little bit after the storms happened, and he was, you know, wondering, you know, if there was a rehabilitator or what he should do. Well, in those scenarios, a lot of times, you know, of course, right now, especially, they probably have hatched and have been out for a while. They spend a week or two out on the ground and in the trees, kind of hopping around, mom and dad helping them for a while. So the best thing to do is find that nearest tree or bush and just put them back in there because mom and dad are probably around still helping them.
Absolutely. And I always kind of cringe whenever we have these high wind storms come through, because I know that I'm going to be getting phone calls after the storm blows through with people finding just that, you know, young squirrels or robins, or I had a call about a hawk that was found out, you know, kind of amongst some branches and on the ground. And, you know, my rule of thumb always is leave them alone, give them 24 hours. If they're still there and they haven't moved, or you know, there's an obvious injury of some sort, then we can try and take some action. But, you know, a lot of times just leaving birds, you know, if they're, you got to imagine if you're blown out of a tree and you land 50 feet on your noggin, you know, you may be kind of out of it for a while. So by letting those birds dry off, letting them kind of have some time to get their senses back, oftentimes when people go back and they look the next day, they're completely gone. You know, I've had people bringing me young owls here lately, and like you said, they don't realize that they're young sometimes when they're trying to help them. But you know, every time I get them, I'm like, yeah, that was a young owl. Now we need to take it back and just kind of put it in the woods and leave it be, and mom and dad will take care of it like they were going to before we snatched it up. Mm-hmm. But it's also a good reminder about deer fawns. We're starting to get those guys, reports of those now as well, and maybe the doe gets killed or injured. And as of now, the DNR is not allowing or taking any orphan deer fawns in. We're not allowing our rehab permittees to take those in and raise them either. And that's because of the concerns with CWD and spreading diseases when we're transporting these young deer around the state to different places. So, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people don't like to hear that answer, but I have to tell them, you know, hey, we have to kind of let nature take its course, or maybe hope that another doe will come by and kind of take them in as her own. But, you know, a lot of times it's just that's the way it was meant to be. Mm-hmm. And things die every day out in the wild. And, you know, they've survived or managed to survive for thousands of years without man taking them to rehabbers every time one of them gets an injury. So people are kind of soft-hearted nowadays, and I understand it, and I appreciate the love for nature, but we do have to realize that, you know, things will be okay if we leave them alone.
Yeah, and we certainly have seen by numbers that we know that they're doing just fine on their own too. So, yeah, it's a good reminder. And you mentioned last time too, you might find them in some odd places sometimes, but mom knows what she's doing, so let them be. Speaking of, we kind of touched on a bird topic here a moment ago. We have some new numbers that have come in here for you from the turkey harvest season now.
Yeah, we do. So for the 2022 turkey season here this spring in Iowa, we harvested nearly 12,000 birds in the state, which is just a little bit above last year's totals, about 300 more than last year were reported. There were 52,500 spring turkey tags sold to hunters here in the state. And so if you do the math, that's just over 20% success rate. And that's really a pretty standard number we see. A lot of times you can figure that about one out of every four turkey hunters are successful. So 25% or less a lot of times. And, you know, I was kind of reading some social media comments on that post the other day, and people don't realize that turkey hunting is a total different ball game than deer hunting, and we a lot of times see our success rates much, much lower. So that was pretty much on par there with what we normally have seen. We had some, as always, some up and down weather, some brutally cold days. We had some high winds during a lot of the season, which I'm confident that if we didn't have all of those windy days, we probably would have had a quite a bit higher harvest number. But anyway, it's a respectable number compared to what some other states are experiencing. I wanted to remind people that beginning July 1, we're going to be seeking the input from the public. So if you're out there and you happen to be seeing young turkeys on the ground, if you can get kind of a count of those young birds, maybe how many hens were with them, or you know, if you're seeing birds in general, whether they're young or adult, we like to get numbers reported of the birds that we're seeing. You can go to the DNR's website, and if you look underneath the wild turkey section there, there'll be a link where you can go to for our survey that you can help us do. And we just ask that you tell us what county it's in. It doesn't have to be a specific location, but we're looking for the county. And the date that you're seeing these birds, and then the numbers of birds and the types of birds that you're seeing. And that's a good, it kind of gives us a good idea going into next year what our numbers are looking like, what our success kind of stories or numbers are for those young ones that are out there. And so, you know, I always keep that link open on my computer, and as I spend time outside and see those birds, I make some notes and get those things turned in, because the turkey biologist really does appreciate hearing from as many people as we can. So if you happen to see birds after July 1, do us a favor and go to our website and report what you see, and we would really appreciate it.
Yeah, great way to help out the effort, to do a little citizen science effort there to help out the DNR. Now, something else that we were going to touch on here today is kind of the reverse of that, the DNR helping us out and trying to do something a little bit more successfully, and that is fishing. They've done some updates now here to the structure maps that are out there for all the lakes on the website. They've added over 2,000 fish structure locations to those maps, so this is a good resource for folks to use if you're going to head out to some of those popular lakes.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of people I know do take advantage of the Fishing Atlas, that is kind of an interactive map that is online on the DNR's website, and we have the same thing for the Hunting Atlas. But the Fishing Atlas is really kind of a great advantage for anglers, especially if you're going to a lake where you've never been before, and you know, you pull up there and you're just not sure even where to begin. A lot of people take some time before they even go, and they get on the DNR's website and they can look at these, where brush piles might be, where rock piles or underwater objects or fish attractors are going to be placed throughout lakes. It's a really good way to go out there rather than, you know, burn a bunch of gas, which nobody's wanting to do right now, cruising the lake and looking for these things with your electronics or the old-fashioned way. A lot of times this will give you a way to get to them right from your smartphone. You can pull that up, and you can literally tell when you're right over the top of a brush pile or a rock pile. So take advantage of that. I know they're doing a lot of work on that and a lot of updates to it. So it's a great free resource there that is almost like cheating sometimes. And yet you think about it, we're giving people so much information sometimes that if we ever lose connectivity, we're going to be in a world of hurt for trying to catch things the old-fashioned way. But they're great tools to have at your disposal.
Yeah, it really can help people out, whether you're on the water or if you're on the bank, maybe even more so there, so you know some of those spots to go hit that you might have some more success. They said that the information can also be downloaded to some of your fish finder gadgets that you have on board as well, so that'd be also a great thing to do for you ahead of time. So go to iowadnr.gov/fishing/fishing-maps to find out more on that. We do have that linked up on our Ag Outdoor page as well at kjn.com if you want to check it out. All right, we had a caller question here, Grant, that we wanted to pose to you here this week. A gentleman wrote in to us and said that, you know, he's seen all the different variations of squirrels out there before, whether it be brown, black, gray, and, of course, sometimes even white. But we've got an unusual one that's been spotted, and I guess has kind of become a little bit locally famous now here. He's all brown, but he's got a bright white tail. How often do you run into different scenarios like this?
You know, that's a pretty unique color variation among squirrel. Like you said, I've seen there's a lot of all black colored squirrels around town, and then there's just your standard fox squirrels that appear reddish or orangish in color. And I've seen this guy myself, and I've even received some pictures of him because he is getting pretty famous. But you don't oftentimes see a animal that has just one, you know, appendage or one leg or one or a tail that is completely white like this one is. So he's a little bit unique, kind of a variation or a form of albinism, I guess you would say. There's all sorts of different, you know, hereditary traits that birds and animals can possess, and this is something that's pretty unique. We don't see this too often in squirrels. We oftentimes see piebald deer a lot of times that are kind of, they almost look like a Holstein cow. They're white with brown spots and that sort of thing. But you don't see that too often. And maybe one of those reasons is with a squirrel, when you put these different colors on them, it can make them an easier target for predators. So, you know, it's probably, while we might think it's cool, he or she, whatever this squirrel is probably trying to hide that tail as much as you can, because it can make him stick out to hawks and owls and that sort of thing. But yeah, it's kind of neat to see that sort of stuff. You don't get to see that too often, but he is a bit of a local legend, and hopefully we won't find him splattered on the road anywhere anytime soon, and he's able to dodge cars because he does live in an area that has quite a bit of traffic. So I hope he manages to keep himself out of trouble with that tail. But it's kind of cool that people are seeing that and taking notice of it.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Like you said, oftentimes it's kind of a modeling across the body, not just one appendage, but just happened to be how it worked out here for this one. So pretty interesting. Well, lots going on in the outdoors. We hope folks are doing it the right way and doing it safe, and continue to do so. Grant, we appreciate your information again this week.
All right, we'll talk to you again in a few weeks.
All right, that's Grant Jelly, Cass and Adair County Conservation Officer. I'm Chris Parks. Thanks to McCune Specialty Firearms in Messina for bringing you another conservation report.